Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, my fan friends. Welcome to another Rahulastapur Book Club. This week, I am joined by Fergus Craig. How are you doing, Fergus?
I'm pretty amazing. How are you?
I'm very good. You have written a book called Murder at Crime Manor, which we'll talk about in a second. The first thing, Fergus, we need to clear up before we do anything else, the regular listeners of the podcast will want to know, is... why didn't you wash up your porridge pan when I shared a flat with you at the Edinburgh Fringe? And how long do you think it would have taken you to wash it up if Chris Addison hadn't just washed it up for you?
This is a great injustice because I got caught in the crossfire. It was nothing to do with me. As you remember, myself and Colin Holt lived with you because at the time we were a double act.
Yeah.
We did 2 years. And on the second year, yes, I thought it was quite cruel what you did. right. So, yeah. So what happened was there was an unwashed pan.
Yeah.
And you decided, I've had enough of this. I'm going to do an experiment and I'm going to make a point.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. I'm going to see how long before they wash up this pan.
Yeah.
But I think what you forget is that me and Colin were like two different people. Right. And I was nothing to do with it. Because I never cooked anything in that kitchen.
Right.
But you always called us Colin or Fergus. So you just took us as one thing.
It was hard to remember which one was which of the two of you. Just two, we were two men.
But I couldn't be responsible for his actions. So it was absolutely nothing to do with me.
Well,
I never went in that kitchen.
Well, then I'm going to have to get Colin Holt on to talk about it. Then I'm pretty sure it was you.
Do you know what I remember from the first time we lived with you?
Yeah.
In 2004.
Yes.
18 years ago. We were like, I was like 24 and I'd never been to Edinburgh before. And I'd hardly done any comedy before. And we'd been like picked up by Avalon, which felt like huge. And Avalon had like, we were spending thousands of pounds and we had like PRs and stuff, and they were saying things. They like had our posters everywhere and were saying things. It was like they were talking as if, well, within a week we're going to be famous. and they were like, if you get into a fight in the Pleasance Bar, you know, call us because we don't want it to get in the papers. Like this. Like, what? So like, and then we took a train journey up, and I had booked the train tickets a few weeks before, and that was when there were still smoking carriages.
Okay.
So I booked up, because Colin was a smoker, I booked us in the smoking carriage as a kind thing to do, which was in retrospect like a horrible thing to do. And in the interim, Colin gave up smoking. So we sat in a smoking carriage for 5 hours, Colin not smoking. Then we went to our flat, met you, who I was like I said, it's only 24. So it was only a few years before that I'd been in my parents' bedroom listening to your radio show. You were like the first famous comedian I'd ever met in that moment. And then you, like, we were all excited. And then I guess you were in a strange place. You had a lot of anxiety about the way your run was going to go or where you were at. And you just sort of like spent an hour telling us how we were going to, Avalon were going to say all this stuff to us, but we're going to lose thousands and it's going to take years. and it might all go to shit.
Yeah.
And you just like said a lot of like really depressing stuff.
Great.
And then Colin said, I need to smoke. And then we went, and then he went and smoked.
I was right though, wasn't I?
No, you were right. It went awful. Yeah.
There you go. Anyway, Fergus, you are and were a stand-up comedian. You were in a double act, as we've just discovered enough of about our Edinburgh past.
Mm.
This is a very interesting book. It is the second book written by you in the character of Martin Fishback. Shall we talk a little bit about where that character came from and how that developed, first of all?
Yeah, the origins are quite sort of complicated. I was living in Montreal for a year with my girlfriend doing nothing. And I decided to make a Twitter video just to make something. And I had the idea of a middle-class dad sending a message to his son on his son's first week of school. University, like for Freshers Week. So it just popped out like this sort of middle-class dad character who's very sort of like a real know-it-all, just sort of like, you know, just join all the clubs, even if it's anti-Semitic, it doesn't matter. You know, it's not that your mother and I don't love you. Your mother loves you very much. You know, all of that. He was very, and that character sort of like found an audience on Twitter.
Yeah.
So I just kept on doing the videos of this middle class dad, and I had no idea where it was going. He didn't have a name, and it just sort of evolved, that character. And then when we moved back to London, lockdown happened. So I was doing like one of those videos every day. And then I started to say in the videos that he had left his job at Colgate and was becoming a crime writer. But I had no idea what I was going to do with that. It was just thought it was a funny thing to say. And then one day I came up with an extract for his crime novel. And I came up with the main character, his sort of anti-hero, Detective Roger Le Carre. But I had no idea where that would go. Do you know what I mean?
No.
I didn't think it would be a book. It was extracts from a book that didn't exist.
Yeah.
And one of the first ones that I did sort of went a bit viral. It was a sex scene. and then I just kept making them, and it just sort of evolved. And then I ended up getting a book deal for the first book, which was called Once Upon a Crime. But it was
because it's quite a, you know, it does... Even when I started to read it, I thought, well, it was very funny straight. In fact, I laughed at the very first line. It's very funny from the start, but you kind of think, is this
sustainable?
When I was reading, when I read it, I wasn't even aware it was the second book. I thought, oh, okay, is this going to sustain a whole book? And it really does, because I would say it's a very, very enjoyable and actually weirdly gripping book. You want to know what's happening, even though it's obviously a pastiche, really, of of bad writing and of bad crime novels and of crime novels in general. But, you know, was that a worry for you that to make the leap from doing, you know, very short film bits and very short extracts to go, will this sustain for an entire book?
Definitely, it was like a massive worry. Yeah. For the first book, I was like, is anyone going to read like 50,000 words of this? Because the videos were like 90 seconds long or something. And yeah. It's like, I'm just trying to pump as much jokes as I can in. And then writing the first book, I thought, well, you have to sustain, you have to have some kind of plot that's going to keep people following. But I still have that sort of anxiety that, like, because it's not, particularly the first one, I felt like, well, because this is not a piece of literary genius, it's not like a proper novel, I have to be making people laugh all the time to justify it.
Yeah.
But then there's that worry that it just gets annoying. So, yeah, that was a big worry. But I think I found the way. But what I did with the second one, because the first one, which happily lots of people really did enjoy, I did, but it was, I sort of did it backwards. So I was saying all the time I was making the videos that these extracts were, these were extracts from a novel, but the novel didn't exist. So I was piecing a story together from extracts right. that I had written with no idea where I was going. But then this second one, I thought I'll really do a proper, you know, whodunit. Do a proper storyline. So this one works more as a book.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's great. Did someone come to you and say, let's do the book? Or did you go to someone and say, can I do a book?
No, someone came to me. I had about three publishers come to me. It was quite exciting. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, Sphere Books came to me, who do like a lot of actual real crime novels. So yeah, it was great. But it's quite a mental thing to write, because it's what, I don't know, 1,000 jokes, 2,000 jokes. But no, I don't show any of the jokes to anyone until the whole book is written. I just don't know if it's funny, right? Until you hand it over.
Yeah. And what's it? I mean, right. I mean, I suppose when you do, and you've done a lot of character comedy, and when you're making up character comedy and doing character sketches, you're obviously writing it in character and to some degree, and maybe even ad-libbing in character. Is it a weird process to be writing an entire book in character? Do you get into character to write the book, or are you always Fergus one step detached, or do you find yourself sort of disappearing into Martin Fishback yourself?
I'm not really thinking about Martin Fishback when I write it, but I am sort of writing it in a, it's a voice, right? It's a persona. Yeah. It's like the idea is it's not a parody of bad crime novels.
No.
It's what would a middle class guy from Exeter who can't really write if he was trying to write a best-selling crime novel.
Yeah.
And the thing I enjoy most when I'm sort of writing it in his character is like getting his gripes out in the writing. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like just sort of like bringing up things about like ridiculous like traffic laws or whatever.
Yeah.
And throwing them into the plot. But
well, yeah, there's lovely stuff, like obviously like there's bits where he's looked at Wikipedia and just copied a page of Wikipedia. I mean, and the thing that really made me laugh at the start is that he is like tentatively trying to get sort of product placement into the book without having organized it. So just chucking some stuff in to see if he can get a deal to do that. So throughout the book. But what I like it, because it's not, you know, it's very subtle, I think, what you're doing, and it's not like all the way through trying, let's make this guy look stupid, let's try and do a terrible novel. It's like it's sort of, some of it works and some of it's good, and some of it's, you know, it's sort of the plot is moving along. It's not all about knocking this character, I suppose, but it is finding him through. I guess there's a bit where where obviously in his mind he's got to the second draft and realised that he's put in something that logically doesn't work, that he's managed to, even though all the phone lines are down and the roads are blocked, the characters have managed to get some pizza delivered.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah, yeah.
and then rather than changing it, he just sort of tries to fudge his way around that. So there aren't loads. You know, you could fill a book with loads of stuff like that. But it's what I mean is it's very subtly done, which I think is the reason it can sustain for, you know, more than a sketch and more than one novel. Even,
I mean, that's the advantage. There are advantages and disadvantages to writing it this way, but that would be an example of a situation where I wrote myself into a plot hole and then remembered that I can easily get away with that because I'm deliberately writing a bad book.
Yeah.
So, but there is that thing of like, if you're just parodying like bad writing, you also need to make it readable.
Yes. Yeah. So. Well, it really surprised. I mean, it didn't surprise me, as I know you're great and I know you're very clever, but I was, I felt like gripped enough by the story to want to know what was going to happen.
Good.
So it does. It really does work on two levels. Even though you're aware it's nonsense, and even though like the crimes are absolutely impossible and so far-fetched that if you think about them, they're, you know. But it's very enjoyable. I mean, it reminded me. I think I sent your publisher a quote, but I don't think they used it. But it sort of reminded me of like Les Dawson playing the piano, and that, you know, you've got to be able to do it well in order to do it.
I saw that quote. It was very kind of you, and I think they are going to use it.
Yeah. Well, there you go. But it did. It immediately felt like, because it's, you know, it is. It's such a subtle line to play with that. With that sort of thing, and, you know, and some of the great, I mean, there's a little feel of Alan Partridge to this, just because it's a pompous middle-aged man, but it's not like Alan Partridge, but you know, it reminded me of Alan Partridge in terms of that it was sustainable, and, you know, the novel, the Alan Partridge autobiography, which the brothers who write for him, the Gibbons brothers wrote, is absolutely fantastic.
I think, yeah,
written in his voice, but you need, for that to work, you need a very strong character, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, what am I saying? I was going to say about the product placement thing.
Yeah.
In the first one, I just did that because I found it funny. I just kept on mentioning Kit Kat Chunkies and things, or unnecessarily like mentioning, like, instead of saying he picks up his Huawei P30 Pro, you know. But my publisher, when there's this thing called NetGalley, are you familiar with that? It's some kind of internet thing that people sign up to and publish. If they're lucky enough, they'll get to read some books before they come out.
Okay.
And review them, and that gives them the publishers an opportunity to work, gauge how to promote it. But because this is like, it's because it's a novel, you can't put it in a comedy section. So it is in the crime and thriller genre.
Right.
So lots of people read it, not clocking that it was a parody.
Okay.
And there were all these, and the first reviews of it coming out, there were quite a lot of crime novel fans saying, I don't understand why he keeps on mentioning Kit Kat Chunky. Just not getting it. So that's what I put in the new one. I put an author's note at the beginning, trying to sort of lay it on a plate for them why, yeah, I keep doing that.
Although I think it's a joke that when laid on a plate is even better, because it's just again, it's not a joke that you massively overplay. It's like, it's really, you know, it comes up every now and again, and that's the fun of it. You sort of forget about it, and then every now and again, there's usually a Kit Kat junkie. Kit Kats are nice, though, aren't they? I just ate one. I think it was because of you. I was trying to give up chocolate.
Right.
I was thinking about, you know, we do comedy and whatever, but the guy who invented the Kit Kat, whoever that, he won't even really know what he did, because he'll be dead by now, right? The Kit Kat's about 100 years old. But that level, you know, they make it. I went on a tour of the York Chocolate Factory where they talked about Kit Kats, and I can't remember how many Kit Kats are made every month. I think it's a billion. They asked, and my son, who's four, shouted out, He said, how many Kit Kats do you think are made in a year? He said, a zillion bazillion or something, he said. Yeah. And they said, well, it's nearly that. So I can only think it's that. But it was, I think it might be a billion Kit Kats a month. You know, they're huge. I mean, I'm
let's just take a moment to think about how many Kit Kats. And if you know, if it was a billion Kit Kats a month, that's 4 billion Kit Kat fingers.
It might even be more, because some of them have got some of them. Yeah, there's some of them, like in Japan, they do all different flavors. So like, it's insane.
Japanese are way ahead on Kit Kats.
Yeah, they are. But if you know, it just puts what we do into perspective, is what I'm saying. You know,
that, like, I would say,
in 100 years' time, do you think they'll be making a billion copies of your stupid fucking book? No, they won't.
Seems unlikely. Yeah. I always think, like, Kit Kats are like, how much is like a Twix? It's like 70p.
Yeah.
But there's like lots of people who are like proper millionaires just from selling something that costs 70p.
Exactly.
So you have to, sell it. I mean, you've got to marvel at it.
Yeah. So you're right to put them in. They're good. And I'm glad we've done. And it's the sort of thing I do on my podcast is, you know, because we do have adverts, I'll sometimes mention something a lot, like a Kit Kat Chunky, and I hope that Kit Kat will get in touch I'm just showing them what I could do with the Kit Kats. And I think I've done that here.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're listening, Kit Kats, Ian Kit Kats.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I really wanted to hear the audiobook. This book has not come out yet. When does the book come out?
The book comes out on October 4th. I've done the audiobook. It's my favourite thing to do. The one you read, did it have an epilogue?
Yes.
Oh, good. Good for that. Good.
It's a very, very good epilogue. I enjoyed the epilogue. There's twists and turns coming in every direction. I presume you do the audiobook in character.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I can. Yeah. It's enormously fun to do. It's just sort of like, shall I read like an extract?
I think that would be nice. Yeah.
Shall I read just, you know, if anyone's still listening, shall I read? I'll read the prologue to the first, to this book.
Okay.
Maybe I won't get to the end, but here we go. Cold. So cold. As cold as a Kit Kat Chunky sitting in a refrigerator. As cold as a refreshing bottle of Heineken on a hot summer's day. As cold as snow. Because it was snow. Although Detective Roger Le Carre didn't know that yet because he was slowly regaining consciousness. His handsome face felt as if it was going through some kind of unnecessarily vigorous spa treatment. But this couldn't be a spa treatment because Detective Roger Le Carre didn't go for spa treatments. His idea of skincare was a fistfight in which both parties agreed to stay away from the face. If you handed Roger Le Carre a gift token for a spa treatment, he'd throw it into a nearby furnace, or more realistically, just say thank you and give it to his wife, Carrie. No, this was no spa treatment. This was something else. The sharp, cold pain on his face was nothing compared to the dull, throbbing pain on the back of his head. He had to move. Something told him there was more pain coming. Some people liked pain. Sickos. When Le Carre worked vice, He'd find some otherwise respectable accountant in some Bodmin brothel humiliating themselves and paying for the privilege. He'd handcuff them and read them their rights, pants still around their ankles. They probably liked it. More humiliation. Sickos. One Valentine's Day, he and Carrie had got curious and tried it out for themselves. Carrie spanking him, digging her heels into his back, squeezing and tugging his southerly region with implements that had arrived in the post that morning in a discreet package from lovehoney.com. Can we stop this, please? It is literally the opposite of pleasurable. I'll leave it there.
It's very good. Yeah, well, it is such a lovely character. And yeah, I think it does. I'll listen to the first one. When I've got some time, I have to get through a book a week to do this stupid show. So it's difficult to, once I get to find something I like, I can't have you back on next week talking about the first one. I suppose I could.
I'd do it. Fine.
Yeah, you'd definitely do it. I also rewatched, you kind of sent me the link, but I'd seen it before, but I rewatched it. The TV pilot of this character is anything, it was very good. And I like the peripheral characters as well. Is anything going to happen with that as in the future?
Thanks, Richard. Yeah. The answer is the BBC turned it down.
Yeah.
It's the British bloody corporation. No, I was very pleased to have got to do it. Because it seemed unlikely when we started. But yeah, we did. I put together a sitcom with, it's just called Martin Fishback. We started with a half hour script that they commissioned. They gave us the money to make a 15 minute pilot. It does feature Detective Roger Le Carre in it, but it's mainly about Martin Fishback and his family. It like went down as well as I could have hoped. Like it got amazing reviews everywhere.
Great.
That reviewed it.
Yeah.
Like people like The Telegraph and The Sun, like were saying, give this a series. But you know, it just didn't happen. Luckily we've got the rights, so.
Oh, great.
We're trying to find another home for it. And you know, there are, you know, possibilities. It might.
Yeah, I hope so. Because I thought all the peripheral characters, and you know, you had a brilliant cast as well, but
amazing, you know,
given how short it was, I just thought you got so much in there, and you immediately hit the ground running with all of the characters, and it can be very easy to, when you've got a good, you know, comedy character to do a show of that, and he's the main thing in it, and everyone else is just yes, Mr. Fishback,
yeah,
but you know, but everyone really had a very recognizable. You know, the wife just getting some champagne out, and then just because she wanted to drink it at 9 o'clock in the morning, like that's immediately you kind of got that character bang straight off. So.
Yeah, that was our idea for the wife, because we worked on it for quite a long time developing the sitcom, and the big problem the whole time was the wife character, because if he's this sort of monster, who would stay with him? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And we didn't want his wife to just be bullied, because that's not nice to watch. So the sort of epiphany was, well, let's just make her drunk. Just one of those women of a certain age who's just sort of made in that Winston Churchill sort of way, just maintaining a constant buzz.
Yeah.
So she's not a depressing drunk. She's just not quite there all the time. And that sort of excuses it. So yeah, in the full half hour script, I think we were able to explore the other characters more. But you know, in the 15 minutes, it ended up, you know, I'm glad that you think we got them in. But I think the BBC felt it was a bit too much Fishback. I don't know. It's difficult.
Oh, I do. You know, it is a show about him. But it is difficult when you're not famous, and it is difficult when you have to get all these things past a committee of people whose job isn't to understand how comedy works.
It's
but, you know, I think that policeman, the sort of doltish policeman, I kind of think about that character quite a lot. I really like. He's just a really lovely sort of stupid character.
That was played by Nathan Fode. I wrote it with Paul Doolan, and he had worked with Nathan Fode, and we just wrote that character specifically for him because we knew it would be funny.
Yeah.
And Amber Kamad is in it, who's in This Is Going to Hurt and is amazing in that. And
yeah.
the guy, Declan Baxter, who plays my son, and Samantha Putt. I don't know why I'm listing the cast. I just thought I've named someone, I've got to name them all. But like, no, we were, you know, it's not dead.
No.
But
it's so, it's too frustrating, you know. But I'm however many years ahead of you, I am 15 years ahead of you, and I've just had so many attempts at getting stuff on, and it sort of is more. The last thing I did, we did a 10-minute taster tape, that never got shown anywhere, and it's sort of frustrating to get that far, and for everyone to be saying this is really good, apart from the people who make the
decisions. It was just, from what I hear, it was just one woman. Literally, it was just one person at the very top was like, nah. But like, literally, like, when it came out, and like everything, all comedy tends to get, because it's really difficult starting comedy, I always think it gets such a negative response online because people are like, do you think this is funny, do you? You know, people get angry if they don't find something funny immediately. But it had such a positive response, and all the reviews were so nice. And I'm like, they can't not give us something. Surely, how can they not? But, you know, that's it. So
it's something. Well, you know, but also then it's great that it has this life. Was the TV pilot before the books, right? Was it?
Books are quicker than TV.
Yeah.
So, the book was... I'd published the first book before we even made the pilot. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So the book, as far as I'm concerned, if people will keep buying it, I would do one of these a year.
Yeah. How long does it take? Because is it easier to write than a proper novel, or is it harder to write than a proper novel? How long does it take you to get a book together?
I think in some ways it's harder because I feel like a paragraph isn't justified unless there's a joke in it somehow.
Yeah.
So in some ways it's harder, but then there's that thing of like, yeah, if something's shit, you just can go, well, it's supposed to be shit. That's the joke. But it took a while. I don't know, about 4 months. But
yeah. I mean, that's quite quick, I think. I wrote my last book in 4 months, but it was autobiography, and you know, I'd got a blog, and I could remember what happened mostly. So it was just writing down what happened. But it took me about 4 months. But I think a lot of people take a lot. You know, some people take like 10 years to write.
Donna Tartt takes 10 years, doesn't she?
Yeah.
No, I do like about 1,000, 2,000 a day.
Yeah.
But it is quite. You do go quite mental. Like writing. Because I find myself in rabbit holes of like him giving like CPR to himself. Like, and you following the logic of that. It's like, am I going mad? Will anyone find this funny? Like, you just go on these paths. The first one, he ends up going to New York because they find a receipt from the Edinburgh Woolen Mill branch. Like New York branch of Edinburgh Woolen Mill, and then they get on the first flight from Exeter to New York. It just goes so mad. I just went a bit mad in that section of the first book.
Yeah, well, that's good. You know, that's good. But I think you know anything is justified with this. So you literally going mad probably will forever will probably help it. But cool. And so do you have another book deal, or are we waiting to see how this one goes before they?
I think we'll probably wait to see how it goes, Richard.
Yeah, okay.
I'd love to do more.
Yeah,
this one, what I wanted to do for the second one was like a Dan Brown, like him getting involved in the world of like the religious, like really, because there's like catacombs in Exeter, and there's like, you know, there's obviously the Bishop of Exeter, and I thought, oh, get him down to like a Dan Brown world of like religious cults and stuff. But then I think my publisher sort of wisely guided me away from that because I actually didn't know anything about it. And he said, well, why don't you just do an Agatha Christie? I think that was a good idea.
Yeah, cool. What else is going on? Are you doing anything else apart from writing books? What else?
Isn't this enough?
It's quite enough, but it's just...
Desperately trying to get trying to get Martin Fish back somewhere. That's the big dream. And then, you know, lots of other, just so many things.
And you're still doing the online little bits and pieces.
Yeah, constantly putting out videos on Twitter, although less now, because I sort of don't want to like drain the character before I've made enough money out of it. You know, and there's sort of two parallel timelines going on, because on Twitter, in the videos, the way it went, I would just do whatever felt funny that day. So during lockdown, I decided that I made his wife quarantine in the garage because she had a cough. And then there was months where his wife was in the garage and he was just like handing food to her through a hole. And then his wife left him for the postman. And now he's single on the Twitter timeline.
Right.
He's single and dating.
Oh yes, but I saw one where he just had sex with someone.
Yeah,
that he'd done, which was very just his utter telling his son about it and his utter happiness at having had sex was fantastic.
So that's the sort of Twitter timeline, but then on the TV timeline, it's still like a family show. So yeah, I've got myself in so many different like rabbit holes. I wish I hadn't named the main character Roger Le Carre as well.
Right.
Because fucking John Le Carre.
Like, well, that's what, so why do you wish you hadn't done that? That's the
joke. I didn't think it would like become a book. And then like I nearly had to change the name because of like legal reasons.
Right.
But I just thought, well, what would this man name his lead character? And I just thought, well, that was a funnily like unimaginative name.
It's just great just to go. It's, you know, it's perfect. I can't say, you know, it's a surname.
Is it? Well, apparently it's not.
He made it up for it, yeah, because it's a pen name, isn't it?
Yeah, apparently he made it up, but it's like it's a different spelling. But like people think, I was in a meeting with a TV person, and they kept on, and they'd like had clearly read the book because they kept on mentioning it, but they kept on referring it into as a spy parody. Like as a John Le Carre parody.
Right. Like,
no, there's like no spies in it. But, yeah.
Good. No, it's a terrific book. I think people will enjoy it. And I actually don't think, although I did know the character beforehand and I had seen stuff before, I don't think it's super necessary to have seen all the stuff. If you have, I mean, it's worth having a look at it just because it's funny anyway, but if you've enjoyed it, but it gives it a bit of context, I suppose, if you're going into it completely cold.
I've sort of made them separate entities now. Do you mean that's an, if you know Martin Fishback, then that's an extra joke, but it's its own thing now, really.
Yeah. So it's very funny. It's very enjoyable. And it's an easy read, but equally it's a very pleasurable read. So, give it a go. Is there any books you're reading that you would like to recommend? Are you a big reader?
I am, actually, yeah. I actually finished last night the book Shuggie Bain.
Oh, yes.
Have you read that?
I haven't, no. I haven't read it yet. I've seen it in a bookshop.
It's dark.
Is it?
I think it's the best book I've read since The Goldfinch. It's really, really good, but like the opposite of this. It's about a boy growing up in Glasgow in a very dysfunctional family. And it's very grim, but very good.
Okay.
But cool. I had that thing, I tweeted today, I have that thing of, you know, if you read the last page of quite a long book.
Yes.
I just keep thinking, this is the last page. I'm reading the last page. I'm on the last page now. So I sort of never sort of inhale what happened on the last page. But that was really good. But now for light relief, I'm going to read a Ronnie O'Sullivan autobiography.
Oh, great. Yeah, well, that's it. So is it, do you mainly go for novels or do you like to mix it up, fiction and non-fiction?
I mix it up. I read, I used to read a lot of autobiographies, but now I do read a lot of novels. I don't read that much crime, funnily enough, but I do read some. The first one was sort of, the Once Upon a Crime was, in a weird way, inspired by Don Winslow. Do you know him?
No.
He's an American crime writer who's very good, but really gritty. It's a bit like The Wire or something. It's just like really, really gritty cops in like the Bronx or wherever. And I just thought it'd be funny to have a middle-class guy trying to set a similar sort of crime novel in Exeter. But yeah, I read. I've got very eclectic reading.
I think it's good to, because of this as well. But I've started getting through a book a week pretty much. So I probably will read 50 books this year, which is great because, you know, I've been a bad reader. I usually read on holiday. But what the fun thing about this show is it just goes from one, you know, I'm doing some children's books, I'm doing some thrillers, and I'm reading books that I wouldn't necessarily always usually have read myself as well. So it is good to be an eclectic reader, I think.
I'm getting really into the audiobooks of like historical fiction, like Robert Harris, Cicero trilogy.
Right.
And I did Wolf Hall, which is long.
I did Wolf Hall. It was long. I can't bear to do the next two as an audiobook. I don't think it took too many dog walks to get through. It was like, it felt like I was listening to Wolf Hall and I probably was for like 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, when anything's over 10 hours as an audiobook, you start to think, okay, I just downloaded, I listened to Great Expectations, which was for fun. Rather than the hope of getting Charles Dickens on here. And then I thought, oh, I'll do David Copperfield. I've never actually read David Copperfield, but I'd read Great Expectations.
Right.
As a kid, so I knew the story really well. But often with those very convoluted novels, it's so hard to follow as an audiobook, I think. And David Copperfield is 30 hours long rather than like 10 hours long. And then it's a huge commitment to get into that.
I think there's it makes such a big difference, the reader.
Yes, it does.
It's like the first two of the Cicero trilogy, the Robert Harris one, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's amazing. And then the third one, the guy who read the first two died. The third one's read by someone else who's pretty good. But he didn't go back. He's obviously not listened to the first two.
No.
He's completely changed the voice of all the characters. You can't change the accents completely. It's like, you can't do that.
I think it's interesting when you're reading someone else's book. I think it's a very, very difficult skill to do. I talked to the guy who recorded my audiobook coming out and said, you know, how much do people come in having read the whole thing with notes and all this sort of stuff? Because some people are amazing at it. And he said, yeah, some people do. And some people, you just know they haven't even read through the book beforehand, which would be a massive thing to kind of go, I'm going to read, say Great Expectations and just see what voices I come. I don't know if this character is going to be a big character. Let's see.
I'd made a massive mistake. I read the audiobook to a Kingsley Amis book. I got the job of reading it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But I hadn't listened to enough audiobooks before, like how people did fiction. And I did read the book beforehand, but it's very literary. And I just, they just cast me badly. I just, to be absolutely honest, I did a bad job of it. And the reviews of it reflect that. People are like, the performance is really bad. And I'm like, yeah, I agree. And I got it into my head that you have to, well, this is somebody else. Somebody's written this and I should just sort of read it kind of neutrally, like to sort of, to transmit the book into people's heads,
but
respect the text and not like put my own voice over the top of it.
Yeah.
But of course you can't just read it in a monotone. You have to act it out.
I've listened to loads now and I prefer if it's the author almost, even if they're not very good at voices and stuff. But I have to say, Martin Jarvis doing Great Expectations, he was absolutely, there was a slightly questionable Jewish interpretation, but apart from that, absolutely solid, fantastic, just brilliant read of it because it just whisked you along with it. So like if you can get a good person to do your dead novelist or your shy novelist, I think it does make a read, but that's very interesting. Yeah, it's interesting.
What was the Jewish mistake. Just a bit sort of.
It was just a bit too. A bit too, you know. But I think it's quite. I think it's just a bit too stereotypically Jewish. But he, I think it was also recorded sometime because I've had it for a long time. I've had it on my phone for a few years, and I thought, oh, I'll actually give that a go. And then I'm absolutely really got into it. Charles Dickens is quite good.
He's kind of.
I don't want to make this not about you anymore, but Charles Dickens is better than Martin Fishback.
No, he'd get a series. it's quite with. Novels, audiobook novels, the cool, mad thing is, even though they're a really serious novel, there might be like a lot of different characters and you're asking one person to do them all.
Yeah.
So you'll have like some 50-something-year-old guy playing like a really sexy woman.
Yeah.
Like, not for a joke, just doing a whole like love scene as this sexy woman from the Middle Ages.
It's fun, and I think having done them, it's fun because it's so hard doing an audio book. I mean, you know, like even doing a book you've written yourself that's you. it's such you're doing it, and you're going, you're sort of 4 hours on the day, and going, oh God, have I just spent have I been doing the last hour properly, or have I just been have I put enough variety into it? So it's a very hard job. So to do it well is very admirable.
I had a lot of fun with this one because, you know, there's a few different characters.
Yeah.
And I really liked doing Patricia Beresford.
Yes.
In this book, who's like the idea of the character is she's a Radio Devon star. She's in like a long running soap opera called Jam on Top. And I wrote it in her voice. I worked at a call center like 20 years ago. And there's this woman called Patricia something who was I'm calling on behalf of the Royal National Institute of the Blind. It's just a lot of fun to do her voice.
That is good. Yes. Well, and it struck me in the book how much controversy there is about scones. Like, there's two major divisions over scones.
Yeah.
Which it should have been a clue when we came to Brexit that it was going to be contentious, because if we can find two things to argue about a quite unpleasant cake, then, you know, when the jam's on top. I mean, it's nice with the cream on, but it's quite a dry, unpleasant. You know, if you don't put cream and jam on it, it's not that nice, is it? It's all right with the.
Well, that's because it's not. That's like saying a dry slice of bread is not good on its own. It's, like, it's made to have things applied to it. So it's three controversies. There's another one.
I'd say a dry piece of bread is better than a dry scone. But, you know, is it scone, or is it jam on top? And, you know, and it's not been settled, and those arguments rage on, and it struck me how weird a country we are that we can get that worked up. And maybe if we just sorted out the scone issues first before Brexit,
yeah,
we could have had two votes about that, and then people would have been so sick about the media wars and the attacks in the street and stuff that would have happened as a result. They might have thought, well, let's not try anything a bit bigger than this. You know, we don't know.
That features in the first book as well. That I sort of overplay the tension between the two counties of Cornwall and Devon over scones or scones, and
yes,
where the cream is applied, and sort of have, you know, I mean, Roger Le Carre. His policy is never to eat a scone in public because he doesn't want to be seen doing the wrong thing. It's like, I don't want another copper dying on my watch.
Well, it's amazing, but it did come across from the book. Look, it's a fabulous book. It's called Murder at Crime Manor. It's out in October, so do buy it. And I think, even though I haven't heard the audiobook, or I've only heard what you have heard in this podcast, I would say the audiobook might be the way to go for this one. How long's the audiobook? How long an audiobook is it?
I think I just found out. I think it's 6 hours, 15 minutes. The first one the first one was 5 hours, 59, which I felt like was a failure. I was like, come on, one more minute. But
I tell you what else I've listened to on audiobook, which I don't think I've tried to get the author on, but I'll recommend it to our listeners. I'll just make sure I've got the title right. I'd love to get, if you know Jeanette McCurdy, some people in our country will, but probably not many adults. She is a child star who's been, she's coincidentally on a show that I was, my daughter found, called Salmon Cat, and then she was in another show before that called iCarly, which were huge on Nickelodeon. And I was watching, you watch a lot of shows with your kids, and you go, oh, God, you know, some of them are very bad. And this one is sort of had the feeling of being bad, and the scripts looked like they were kind of quite typical Saved by the Bell kind of rubbish. But there was something about the central performance. Ariana Grande's in Salmon Cat as well. And the performances were better than the material, especially from Jeanette McCurdy. And then I didn't know anything about her. And at the same time, all these news stories started hitting about her having written this amazing autobiography, which is called I'm Glad My Mom Died. And it's about her. That's about 6 hours long. And it's about her, how she got into kids TV, but also her overbearing mother. And it's quite sad. And
right. I've seen that that's a big hit.
Yeah, it's a big hit in America. So I have contacted her via Instagram, but she hasn't responded because she's number one in the she's in the New York bestsellers list. So if you're American and you know Jeanette McCurdy, tell her I'm not just some weird bloke from Instagram. I've got a proper podcast with Fergus Craig on it. And a proper author, proper authors like...
And more famous people.
Famous, respectable, like proper academics and stuff I've got on here. So if Jeanette McCurdy, I think she's... it's a really good book. It's really well written, and it's really interesting. And do buy that one as well. And you don't need to know anything about Salmon Cat and all that sort of stuff. There's a bit about that in there, but the message is, Fergus, if you have children,
buy her book,
and then buy her, Fergus. The message of that book is, don't live your life. Your own dreams through your children, or it'll turn out quite badly. It is a book about abuse and all sorts of unpleasant things, but she stays very upbeat throughout it all, I would say. Anyway, don't buy that. Buy A Murder at Crime Manor by... It says Fergus Craig on the front, right? It doesn't say...
Yeah, that was another sort of like big decision.
Yeah.
But yeah, we went for Fergus Craig. Okay. We didn't want to have Roger Le Carre, Fergus Craig, and Martin Fishback, three names that people don't know.
You should put, the Le Carre thing could get you some sales from confused old people. So just get that on the front. It's like there's two Jeffrey Archers, aren't there? There's a second Jeffrey Archer.
Is there?
Yeah. There's a Jeffrey Archer who spells it with the different,
really,
with the G rather. I think I'm right about that. I won't say. I better shut up in case I libel him. Saying I won't. I won't say anything. But there's two Jeffrey Archers, so people might get confused. There's two Charles Dickens. There. All right. Thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much to Chris Evans, not that one, for producing the show, even though he was unable to speak to me because he messed up the technology and I couldn't hear him and he couldn't hear me. And then we realised that didn't matter because we don't have to talk to each other. But he's a very good man, and thank you to him. And thank you to my guest, Fergus Craig. Buy his book.
Thank you.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.